Good evening. This is First Thursday Community Conversation on WTIP 90.7 FM in Grand Marais and 91.7 FM Translator W219CU Gunflint Trail. With Barbara Jean Myers, I'm Jay Anderson. Each month we choose a topic for discussion, invite guests into the studio, and invite you to join in the conversation. Tonight we have expanded our broadcast another half hour to 7:30 p.m. Governor Tim Pawlenty has laid out a path toward easing a $4.5 billion budget deficit for the next biennium. His DFL majority legislature is not pleased with many of the cuts proposed. We've been exploring some alternatives they hope will not result in veto once those compromises reach the governor's desk. Now, on the income side, the president has signed a $790 billion stimulus package last month that will direct money to the states. Although the governor thinks the bill is too long on spending and too short on tax cuts, he will, in his words, cash the check. State budget cuts will negatively impact many local government programs. Stimulus money, on the other hand, may or may not help soften the blow. Tonight, we'll discuss where Cook County can expect to take the biggest hits and where there may be some relief from all the fiscal battering. Sacrifice and stimulus, budget winners and losers in Cook County. We invite you to participate in the conversation. The number to call is 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. That's 387-1070 or toll-free 800-473-9847. Our email address is WTIP@boreal.org. In the studio tonight, from Cook County Government, are Shay Kosmalski, County Engineer, Sue Futterer, Director of Health and Human Services, Brady Powers, Auditor-Treasurer, and Commissioner Bob Fenwick. And we are also joined by Grand Marais City Administrator Mike Roth. Thank you all for being here. Now again, if you have a question or comment for tonight's guest, please call us at 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847, WTIP@boreal.org. Now let's start the discussion with a question for each of you to weigh in on. Governor Pawlenty is calling for a $33.6 billion budget. That's down 2.2% from the current biennium. His plan calls for tax cuts for businesses, increased K-12 funding, and steep reductions in spending on higher education, local government aid, and human services. What's your reaction to that?
Would you like me to go first?
Just go right ahead.
Bob Fenwick, your county commissioner. In the entirety, in general, I would commend him for doing the proper thing. The proper thing is to cut the budget, at least cut the increased spending. I think he's doing the right thing. I haven't always agreed with what he has done as far as how those changes filter down to the local level. But if, in fact, his goal is to keep spending in line, I think we need to support that.
Shay?
I'll weigh in a little bit on the road issue. We're already in a deficit situation, but there are two sides to this coin. I'll talk about both of them. Including our state trunk highways and interstates and our county roads, statewide only 27% of our roads are in average to good condition. And then last year we took a real hit in the construction season as prices skyrocketed 25 to 40% in just one season. We do have the new transportation bill, and that's estimated to add about 4% to our budgets. But with the inflation increases, those dollars still are not buying the same amount. And coupled with cuts to stay within the new levy caps, it's not a pretty picture. We're not that much different from other counties. As the dollars buy less, we stretch our five-year transportation plans into an eight-year plan. And now many of us are looking at dropping projects off of those plans altogether to adjust to the inflation cost. On the other side of the coin, in my travels as an engineer throughout my career, Minnesota is one of the best states in the country to be a county highway engineer. The state aid program that we have through MnDOT is one of the best laid out programs that I've seen in my travels. It gives us a lot of ability and authority to direct our projects at the county level that you will seldom see in other states that I've been to. So we're lucky on that end of things, but the money end of it right now is definitely going to hurt us and continue to as our roads continue to deteriorate.
Mike, what about the city's reaction to that?
Well, with any budget, the devil is in the details, and the cut of 2.2% doesn't translate into 2.2% for very many of the little pieces in the state budget. And it certainly doesn't translate to 2.2% for local government aid and direct payments to cities. It's more, they call it 5% in 2009 and 10% in 2010, but it's significantly larger than that as a percentage of state local government aids. And for the city, it's $50,000, which is more like 20% in 2009, and $100,000, which we're getting close to 40-some percent in 2010. So I understand the difficulty the state has with the budget. I wish that they could find solutions that were a little more even across the board for agencies to deal with.
Sue Futter, your budget is, I think, the largest in the county. What does 2.2% mean?
Actually, the Health and Human Service budget is not the largest one in the county. It is the Highway Department, I believe. And following that is law enforcement, and then I believe it's ours. And I'm not exactly sure where the general fund fits into that. But that's a question.
Sheriff would be next.
And then, okay.
And then zoning.
All right. So I just want to let people know that. It's Shay's problem.
I stand corrected. It's still a lot of money and a lot of programs.
It is. It really is a lot of money. I guess what I would say is certainly we understand that there aren't always enough dollars to go around, and so that's an issue. And county government, however, is truly the safety net for our most vulnerable populations, and that's persons, the elderly, young children, persons with disabilities, persons that have mental illness, addictions, etc. And to place a large amount of cuts in the human services area at a time when people are very, very stressed just because of the economic conditions, a lot of job loss and that kind of thing, really doesn't seem very feasible. And it is a concern that we have all over the state in terms of how will we survive all of those reductions and still maintain being this local safety net for those people.
Well, Brady, you see the money as it comes in, and how do you stand on this?
Well, yeah, again, as Mike said, the devil's in the details. What is 2.2% going to translate through all the budgets, various grants? I think there's a lot of details to be worked out yet. There are lots of public safety, emergency grants, et cetera. I mean, it could be something less than that. It could be significantly more than that in the end. As far as our aid, our general state aid, the program aid, we took the most significant hits over the last, you know, six, 7 years. So it's not a big shock to us right now. We've already weathered that. We're looking at a drop this next year of $94,000, could be $150,000, all depending on that 15 regional center plan for public health human services, whether or not we go along with that plan. That so $90,000 or $150,000. We have enough fund balance, and I'm sure they've calculated that a lot of counties have a good fund balance. They can weather that kind of drop for a year. I'm actually more concerned about the long term, that structural deficit, what's going to happen after this, you know, in the next upcoming bienniums. A 2.2% general cut, I mean, that seems very reasonable. But.
Well, then why are we hearing that the proposed cuts could reduce that by another 10%? I mean, we're talking, I think, with the city, you're looking at a 10% reduction in local government aid?
Just to put some numbers to it, we were supposed to receive in local government aid almost $200,000 both in 2008 and in 2009, and that was reduced about 2 weeks before the end of 2008 by $40,000, and it's planned on being reduced by close to $50,000 in 2009. So, I mean, as a piece of the local government aid, it's a significant percentage adjustment, and especially the timing of it after we've already completed spending the 2008 budget and we've already adopted, according to the schedule that is provided to us by the state, all of our 2009 budgeting, setting up property tax, pretty much making all of our plans, and now to have to adjust to that level, I don't think 2.2% is a really accurate or fair way to look at it when we have to look at it. Now, unlike the county, we don't want to try and absorb it anymore. We had to absorb it last year with the $40,000 reduction at the end of the year. But for the $50,000, we're thinking about it in the way that Brady described it, as a structural issue that's an ongoing issue. And I don't have a lot of faith that if times do turn around quickly, that the state will come back and give us that money back. And so it's really an issue to try and find structural adjustments in our budget. And although the city has a very diverse revenue stream, a lot more diverse than most small towns our size, we have to absorb this little piece, this $50,000 piece, in a very small chunk of our budget.
And when you're talking structural, what do you mean by that?
I mean that $50,000 isn't one time, it's every year, and $100,000 next year. So every year, it's $100,000 less than we were expecting to have. So rather than just spend that extra $100,000 out of our reserves and hope that it comes back in the future, we really need to find a way to plan on not spending it every year.
So you're talking about adjusting the whole budget process down.
That's right.
I think the thing to understand, too, is that there is no special formula that distributes local government aid or county program aid to the counties. It's all different. It's all different for the cities, too. And so you can't look and say every city is getting X percentage of their budget in terms of local government aid. It isn't the case. So the reality is a 2.2 cut across the board is going to affect every municipality and every county in a different way. And the other thing to remember, too, is that the relationship between cities and the state and counties in the state is quite different. When the cities talk about local government aid, they're, I don't mean this literally, but for the most part, they're really talking about a check in the mail to add to their general fund. We talk about some of our program aid, and that's a part of the overall relationship between the county and the state. Much of our relationship kind of is hidden in terms of how we spend our money to give the services to the clients out here that are state programs. So there's a part of this that's real aid, but then there's a part of it that we actually spend money, whether it's through maintenance of effort or cost sharing or literally spending money to meet the demands, that is different than what cities are having to do.
Again, this is an expanded version of First Thursday Community Conversation on WTIP with Barbara Jean Myers. I'm Jay Anderson, and tonight we're talking about sacrifice and stimulus, budget winners and losers in Cook County. Where will state budget cuts be deepest, and will the Federal Recovery and Reinvestment Act be more than a Band-Aid? Join the conversation and give us a call, 387-1070, 1-800-473-9847, or join us by email, WTIP@boreal.org. I want to follow up on a couple of things that was brought up in the first round. One of the things you mentioned, Shay, is in looking at the budget, you may have to consider dropping projects. What kind of projects would be dropped?
Well, 3/4 of our budget comes through the MnDOT State Aid Program. We're able to, 60% of that goes to our new construction projects, and that would be the category that we would be looking at dropping projects. We've been really fortunate so far. We were able to lasso a little bit of stimulus money that kept me from having to consider dropping anything. I did stretch out the 5-year plan a little bit when I presented it last fall to the board, and they'll be getting the new and improved version for this year. Shortly here at the end of March, I'll be presenting that to them if all goes according to plan. So we were lucky in Cook County. Most other counties weren't as lucky as we were, especially when you take into account how little of that stimulus transportation money did end up with the small counties.
I'll get to the stimulus money in a minute, but one of the things I think Brady mentioned, alluded to, was the Human Services Regional Centers. governor's budget plan floats that program. There would be, as I understand it, 15 of them. And amounts of money to counties seem to depend on whether they opt in or out of the plan. So, Sue, can you tell us about that program and where would these centers be?
And, Sue, let the people know how much you're involved in this, would you please?
Yeah, I know. You can tell them.
In terms of my involvement
at the state level,
I am currently serving as the president of the Minnesota Association of Social Services Administrators. So, have been very actively involved in understanding what the governor is talking about in terms of 15 centers, and also in responding to that as best we can as state human services directors. When we talk about the 15 service centers, it's still quite a mystery to many of us. I would say that at this point, we aren't aware of a map or exactly where those 15 centers might be, but we do have some parameters upon which they may be formed, and that is a population-based parameter. In other words, if you are a county of 250,000 people or more, you may be your own entity or one of the 15, and there's probably four of those counties. Those would be the larger metro counties that would qualify for that. And in the other cases, what the proposal says is, counties would need to form into some type of a consortium, either through a joint powers or some other type of formal agreement approved by the Commissioner of Human Services that would in total 100,000 persons. And so what that means is, even if you look at the population of Cook and Lake County together, you're only talking maybe about 16,000 people. So obviously that would be a larger geographic area in order to cover all of those things. We have a number of concerns about that 15 center issue. Obviously, the concern of what is best for clients has really not been addressed. Also, we have not seen a fiscal note in terms of how much this might cost. Clearly, what it looks like is that this is about efficiency. And when we listened to last week, the commissioner of the Department of Human Services, one of the things he talks about is that the inefficiency of small counties and the difficulty for the Department of Human Services to supervise all of those small counties with all of the different programs that they have. So ultimately, there are currently 84 of those service centers. And so obviously, it could be more efficient in terms of their perspective if we had only 15.
Let's expand on that. One of the questions I wanted to ask right about this time is that some legislators have been arguing that cuts would result in more efficient government services. What do you think about that? I mean, how would cuts that would result in 15 centers as opposed to 84, would that be more efficient? Jump in, anybody.
This is a huge part of the conversation, Jay. If you're asking me as a county commissioner to accept the premise that is being forwarded that small counties are less efficient in delivering the services at the human services level, I would have to say I would not accept that premise. I don't believe that. And to make the decisions that are being made or trying to be made at the state level based upon the premise that smaller counties are less efficient may be heading us down the wrong road. It was interesting today. We had an opportunity to hear, if anybody was listening to another radio station, on NPR today, Arne Carlson was being interviewed by Eric Eichten. And I happened to catch it at just the right time where Arne Carlson was asked the question by Eric Eichten in this problem time that we're in. Maybe this is the time, don't you think, Governor Carlson, to relook at how government is shaped, how we relate to each other at the state, local, and county levels and things like that. And interestingly enough, Governor Carlson indicated, yes, he thought that was the case. But more importantly, what I heard, and he said very blatantly, was that he felt that if those kinds of changes are going to be looked at, that the local governments should be far more empowered than they are today to deliver services, pointing out that smaller governments are far more efficient, closer to their clientele, closer to their citizens. I couldn't agree with him more. So from the standpoint of how Sue and I are going to approach this issue from the northeastern Minnesota standpoint, I say, number one, we are not going to accept the premise that smaller counties are more efficient. We are not going to accept the premise that if you consolidate administration at some point and not keep local distribution in place, that this is a good way to go. So we will probably work very hard to not go along with this to the letter of the law at this point.
Brady, do you know of any counties that do share on this level at all right now?
Yeah, on the human services level?
Any level.
We do.
We share with our court administrator is Lake County and Cook County, and I'm sure that type of thing has duplicated, you know, in certain instances across the state.
Yeah, actually, in Lincoln, Lyon, and Murray counties, they have had a shared human services department for a number of years, and also Faribault and Martin counties have done that. And I guess when you say sharing, it what do we really mean by that? Because there have been a number of counties that have restructured departmental operations. For example, like here in Cook County, probably 7-8 years ago, at least we moved to a combined human services and health department. So we have one director for both agencies. And in the Northeast region here, all of the counties have that kind of a departmental arrangement, except for Cooch County. And so there is a lot of this kind of thing going on already. We are involved in many shared efforts in human services with Lake County and Carlton County, Cooch County, in terms of delivering some better health and social services programs for those people that are on public assistance. We have been in a Lake and Cook County collaborative for serving children and families for a number of years. So there is a lot of that going on, some of it less formal than perhaps what the governor is talking about. But I think one of our frustrations also is that they failed to recognize the number of those kinds of efforts that are going on statewide in health and human services. And certainly those things were formed as a need had arisen locally, and counties got together, whether it be commissioners, whether it be department heads or whatever, and talked about how can we do better service for our local clients. And that's how some of those things came about. And clearly the 15 service center approach does not recognize that there could be a better way, or this is, you know, the way to do it, rather than looking at a local input, organizing it locally around what's best for the clients, the population, the divisions, department divisions.
Brady, you want to say something?
Yeah, we do things that aren't, say, necessarily, you know, department to department sharing, like human services. I'm thinking of our Minnesota County's information services. And that's a multi-county joint powers organization based out of Grand Rapids, anywhere from 13 to 20 counties working together on our tax system, our financial systems, our recording systems, and the like. It varies with the number involved and the different types of computer operations. And that's one, it was not state mandated. I mean, counties looked at it and said, how can we share something that makes sense to all of us, and that joint powers law allows us to do that and take that initiative? And there's many other examples, I'm sure, just like that.
Well, the city, for example, and the county share law enforcement, and the city and the county also cooperate on streets and highways. So let's address both of those.
Well, actually, the city and the county cooperate in a lot more areas than that. We cooperate in almost all of the things that we do, and especially in any place that we've looked at redundant type services, we've found a way to try and do them jointly. You know, the libraries operated jointly. The city recreation crews help out with maintenance on some county properties and some state properties even. The county and the city road crews cooperate, and the county, of course, provides all of our snow plowing for us in the neighborhoods during the wintertime. The city purchases services from county's planning and zoning department and from their assessor's department on occasion, and we oftentimes get help from their information services departments. That, you know, that the concept of sharing services and working together, a lot of local governments do a very good job of that and have for a long time. And I don't think there's any difference. Grand Marais and Cook County, we set a very good example of that.
Shay, I can I know that this is working with the highway department and the city and this, but how would you do that with another county? I mean, how would you? I mean, what are you going to share? Plows?
There is one county that does share a county engineer. And I don't recommend that because a lot of our federal level funding is quite competitive. And I think you want your county engineer rooting for your county and not questioning whether they're working for you or the guys next door. So, but beyond that, what the County Engineer Association does share in a way that I have never seen before is the network of engineers is the most helpful group that I've ever seen. If you've got a question, if you've got a situation, you want to find out if someone has been through what you've done so you don't have to reinvent the wheel, you zap an email out to this group and you'll get answers, more answers than you know what to do with in 10 minutes to an hour's time. It's a fabulously supportive group. We're always there for each other. And so there's a huge amount of sharing. Talk about efficiency. When you've got a situation like that, hey, I've never dealt with this. Maybe somebody else has. Boom, you've got a document in front of you. You've got some examples to pull from to make fit your own situation. It's fabulous.
We're discussing sacrifice and stimulus, budget winners and losers in Cook County. If you have a question or a comment for tonight's guests, please call us at 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. Our email address is WTIP@boreal.org. Before I switch to talk a little bit more about the stimulus package, let's stay with the idea of cuts, like in local government and other cuts. Where do you go? How do you prioritize? If you're faced with this, what are you looking at for priorities?
Well, I guess I would answer that in terms of the majority of things that we do in public health and human services are mandated services. And therefore, we need to follow the statutes that are in legislation. There are a few things that we do that are not, but some of those programs clearly, for example, our in-home support program is not a mandated program, but without that program, we would have more of our elderly in perhaps the nursing home or some other facility that would be at a lot higher cost than it is to keep them, the elderly, in their home. So if we looked at that, what I would do and what we've done in the past is identify all the mandated services that we have, identify those things that are not mandated, but what we see as the financial advantage to keeping those services in place, bring those to the Human Services Board, and clearly it will be a commissioner board decision as to what would be eliminated or what would be cut. And that's how I see doing the process, is you really have to try to keep meeting the local needs and not eliminate those things that are going to actually increase your costs. The other thing I think that's important there too is you also need to take a look at some of the programs and some of the things that we do bring revenue into the county, and federal dollars and state dollars in a match, our administrative reimbursement and those kinds of things. So you also need to weigh, what if we cut or reduce staff in this area, what is that going to do to our revenue? So those are some of the ways that we would look at it in human services.
For the highway department, again, it's also a level of service issue. We all, our snow policy says, reflects the fact that we all live here. We know how to drive in this kind of weather. We don't need to have a bare pavement policy. But as we get more and more people moving from the outside who do have come from areas where they do have bare pavement policies in the winter, it's getting harder and harder to not be able to accommodate those folks also. So it's a level of service we do. I think in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to start seeing it significantly in our road condition out there. The last 10 years, that budgets have been slipping for highway departments statewide is going to catch up in another 5 to 10, and we're going to start seeing it then. Right now, I'm trying to trim out little bits and pieces, and really where I'm absorbing most of it is in our old equipment that we have. Is it the best way to do it? Well, not really. But again, we need to plow the snow. We need to make sure people get to where they need to get to. We need to keep the roads passable. So it's a choice of what's going to be the lesser of the evils right now. To try to keep up those levels of service for everyone.
Bob, I want to get back to something you brought up because I think it's kind of central to the current debate that's out there right now, and that's that you don't buy into that premise that local governments, cities and counties, are somehow less efficient. Why is that? Can you talk specifically about why you don't believe that that's true?
I think it has a lot to do with knowing the community. And let me take social services as an example. If you look at Hennepin County, well, maybe we shouldn't look at Hennepin County. Let's just look at the larger counties. Normally, there are silos in place, particular job descriptions that have to be done. This person takes care of case management in some area. This person takes care of child care. This person takes care of this. And they don't venture out of those silos. What happens in a local community like Grand Marais is, and it happens a lot, is as Administrator Sue would be seeing things that need to be done, and other people within the department see things that need to be done, and they're willing to cross that line and do the things in another area of expertise that they can possibly do. That does not happen in a larger setting like a larger county. I think that alone helps in the efficiency. The knowing of the people, I was just listening again to the radio yesterday to a social services person, I believe it was in Wadena County, if I'm not mistaken, talking about servicing the adult population there, which is growing up obviously rapidly. Two out of every 10 will be over 65 at some point in that county very shortly. And he's out there going face to face to these people, finding out their issues, finding things in the home that go wrong that you would only see if you were in there and you couldn't tell if you were talking to them on a phone. The example he gave was he asked this lady a question, and while he was in the home, he realized that she had to walk to the refrigerator to go to her notepad to be able to answer the question. You wouldn't know that if you weren't in the house. You wouldn't realize that this lady was having a problem with memory and couldn't coordinate those things. So those things that happen at the local level are significantly different in terms of how you deliver the service. That's probably the biggest reason that I can see is how we distribute the workload. It's a big, big deal, I think.
Mike, what do you think about this issue?
I would certainly echo a lot the things that Bob talked about. Local governments in particular are more effective at delivering a lot of the services because of that relationship that you can have with the people you're providing the service to that's not possible in a larger setting. And certainly I would think that's a health and human service type thing with such a relationship-heavy concept that just having that personal connection with the people allows you to understand what needs to be done. It allows the community to understand how the services are being provided. They know the people that are providing them. There's a little more free flow of information, and of course that's a good and a bad thing sometimes where it's a free flow of information no matter where you go. But local government, I think, is always going to be the best place where government services can be provided because of that intimate connection.
Let me add one more thing, Barbara Jean, too. And it goes down to, I think, one of the biggest buzzwords right now within government, that's accountability. Local governments are far more accountable to their constituents, to their electorate, to all of the people that are close to them than by far than any larger government can be. We've been talking about this at the Association of Minnesota Counties in various ways: accountability, transparency, all of these things. Very little happens at the local level that the constituency doesn't know about, nor knows the decision process that took place in getting to where they got to. Unlike the state, and you can, the perfect example is what happened at the state level last year and the resulting maintenance of effort problems that took place and the following legislation that had to be passed in the very first days of this legislative session to overturn what took place at the end of session last year. Literally, within a matter of a few hours, laws were passed, unbeknownst to the total electorate down at the legislature. If they didn't know, certainly the citizens of Minnesota didn't know. That can't happen at a very, very local level. And I think that's a very important part too.
One of the things that I wanted to mention also when we talk about efficiencies and deliver, particularly of things like health and human services, is that I think really in a smaller community, a smaller county, we realize that no one agency has all the resources and staff and everything to do something or resolve issues by themselves. And so what happens is we work very closely with our partner agencies, other healthcare providers, the doctors, the hospitals, you know, mental health providers. We sit once a month and deal with child protection issues with all the players that are involved. We talk about adult protection team, where we look at all of the needs of some of the elderlies, and all of those partners around the table contribute to what it is that they know about that individual and what it is that the service and how it should be delivered in the most appropriate way. Obviously, all of these things are very confidential and people sign forms that they recognize that kind of thing. But I talk to some of my colleagues in larger counties, and, you know, they don't even sometimes know who the other providers are other than possibly through email or talk. We here sit together around the table. We know each other. We work together. And I truly believe that that results in better services for our clients.
And I'd like to share what I've seen over 14 years of my career I spent with a federal agency at the local level. And I watched that federal agency become extremely inefficient trying to do just what they're talking about now, combining services. They tried to combine services. They went to service hubs. They even contracted out your computer help. So you dialed a number and someone tried to walk you through when your computer would freeze on you. And I watched that agency just become so incredibly inefficient. It was really sad to see it happen. And I'm really glad that I'm working for the county now. I really am. And if working for them taught me one thing, I was able to live in a lot of different places. That's what works fine in one place doesn't necessarily work in another. There's so many things that need to be tied together. Climate, environment, the political climate, the people, what they believe in, the geography. And this is talking everything from engineering to environmental documents to other decisions. What works in one place doesn't necessarily work in another. So you lose efficiencies when you try to combine those and assume that everybody's going to be the same and be able to be taken care of the same way.
So how do you resolve this dilemma? You know, if the state has one attitude, folks at the local county and city level have another attitude, you know, what happens? What do you do?
One of the things that I'd like to say to address that is that I think that there could be, and certainly we're looking at the possibility of what efficiencies could come as a result of working closely with some other counties or consolidating some services, perhaps those kinds of things that aren't warranted or don't warrant like an immediate attention here or an immediate response. It's more something that could be done, some of the paperwork, some of the processing of eligibility forms, some of those kinds of things might increase some of our efficiencies. I think that we need to look at that. We need to talk about possibility for redesign, perhaps sharing some accounting functions. Those might be ways that we could do things. Other things, though, we'll definitely still need a local presence, people to respond immediately. So I think that that's a process, and it takes time, and it should be, again, about people or counties or commissioners that are interested in doing that, and with partners that it seems to work best with them in an experimental kind of form, and then go from there. But it shouldn't be something that's forced upon you to say all of a sudden we're all going to have one service center in, you know, northeastern Minnesota to deliver these services. We should go through that process and try things first on a more or less a pilot basis.
In the larger scheme of things, I had the very good fortune in timing an opportunity to be president of the Association of Minnesota Counties a couple of years ago. And leading up to that, I was on the executive committee there for three years. And one of the biggest pushes that we tried to get through, and I feel proud about trying to work in this area, was to go from being an organization that was only responsive, reactive to problems that came down from the state. I got very frustrated at times sitting in legislative steering committee meetings, board meetings, and every time the state would do something, our immediate knee-jerk response as a county or a county advocacy group was, where's the money? How can you do this to us? You need to send us more money. You need to do this. We need to take the high road. And so the quick answer to your question is, how do we make this happen? I think local governments, counties, cities, have to reclaim what we were back when the United States started, and reestablish what we really are as individuals and local units of government, and take the high road and bring it to this legislature in a very positive way. Bring them alternatives as to how they can relate to us at the local government level, which is what AMC has done, and we're proud of that. We have brought forward what we call the redesign project for the state. It's getting some traction. Of course, politically, it is accepted in different places for different reasons. But I think the bottom line is we need as citizens and as local governments to take the high road and reclaim the relationship that we should have with our larger units of government. And that is actually we're in charge.
All of this talk about consolidation of services and efforts sounds a little bit like domestic outsourcing to me. I'd like to remind people that if you have a question or a comment for tonight's guests, please call us at 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. Our email address is wtip@boreal.org. Let's talk about stimulus. According to the White House, now I realize stimulus is really in a state of flux, but what I know so far, according to the White House, Minnesota can expect 66,000 jobs to be created as a result of the stimulus package. Now, in Minnesota, we're currently at 7.6% unemployment, so that's no small figure. The 8th Congressional District should see about 7,400 jobs as a result of the stimulus. Now, do you have any idea of what kind of jobs these are? Will they be local? Any indication in any of your departments?
Well, we were able to snag a little bit of stimulus money with the highway department. I'm just so curious what their definition of what constitutes a job. Most of our bigger projects in Cook County are usually the bigger contractors out of the area get those contracts because they're the only ones with enough sophisticated equipment, the kind of financial backing to be able to deliver those projects. Sometimes they do hire local subcontractors. We do see that. And personally, as far as and talking with folks in the construction industry, they don't see the way that this is being handled as benefiting local jobs or jobs period as much as everybody is talking about, because the projects, the transportation projects at least, have to be delivered so quickly. All that most of us can really submit for was to do where we recycle the blacktop and put down new blacktop. That's putting most of the money back in the oil company's pockets, in my opinion. But it will bring in a few local jobs with the one project we have.
Well, you mentioned there is some money coming in to the highway department. Can you tell us what that is?
I sure can. It was tough. I think something like 2% of the stimulus money that came to Minnesota for transportation went to counties outside of the metro area and cities. So that's 80 counties, 140 cities, approximately 2% of that. That's not a whole lot. Most of the dollars, looking at the list of transportation projects, went to higher profile, big dollar projects. And most of the rest of us, after doing weeks of running around like chickens with our heads cut off, were told, gee, sorry. And we had the fun job of going to tell our commissioners, boy, I tried, but it just wasn't in the cards. We got lucky here in Cook County because we have the Superior National Forest up here. We have some federal money that we're able to tap into called Forest Highway Funding. And we were told the same thing. Hey, we're going to have $3-4 million. There's going to be lots of money. We all submitted our projects for counties that are within, have the Superior and the Chippewa National Forest here in Minnesota. We competed for that money. And it turned out there was only $1 million. So that really wasn't a whole lot of money. Something like 15 projects, $18 million worth. And we were able to, after a long, exciting debate, to get the half that was allocated for the Superior National Forest. That will basically, what I touched on earlier about projects dropping out of the five-year plan altogether, what that's going to do is it's basically going to salvage the repaving of the Gunflint Trail, that project that we had slated for next year. Otherwise, that one was looking a little shaky if it was going to be able to happen or not.
Mike, Brady, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just going to say it. In the state's financial report for February on the stimulus plan, just to give you a little bit on what they estimate, they've got 45,000 jobs non-farm in their report. The highest estimate is in construction, 7.5 million of those. Second highest would be manufacturing, or retail trade, 5.9, which could touch on us. Manufacturing, 5.1. Professional business services, 5.1. And then leisure and hospitality, 4.9 is next. And if that does, you know, translate up here, that could be significant. Just to give you a few of the numbers.
Mike, city going to get any stimulus money?
I don't know. The programs that the state has to spend the stimulus money that Shay's talked about, in particular for road construction, that cities under 5,000 don't qualify for. Community development block grants, cities under 5,000 don't qualify for. We don't generally get direct money from the federal government. So there are a number of programs, in particular for water or sewer infrastructure replacement, where the state will get some money, and hopefully they will spend that on cities' projects. But the city's kind of done a pretty good job of keeping up on our infrastructure in the past 10 years, and we don't have any shovel-ready projects that we would ask for money right now. So I would hope that if it's the community that might be able to access the stimulus funds, and not necessarily the government agencies, but anybody out there with a good idea, certainly like the Cook County Local Energy Project, talking about some really exciting ideas that maybe they can help go out and get a little stimulus package money to help with. That's where I'd love to see it spent.
Brady, let me get back to you for a minute. The state said that we can expect to see the first stimulus money this month. For the end of fiscal 09, as well as to be used in 2010 and the first half of 2011. Are you seeing any of this so far?
No, I haven't seen anything directly, but and one of the biggest items in their budget for 2009 state money is that, and Sue may know more about this than I do, the federal medical assistance. They have $464 million that's expected to hit the books in fiscal year 2009. I mean, most of the rest of it, I would expect up here, is going to go to, the immediate stuff is going to go to individuals, whether it's unemployment or tax credits, mm-hmm. or that type of thing.
Okay, again, this is an expanded version of First Thursday Community Conversation on WTIP with Barbara Jean Myers. I'm Jay Anderson. Tonight we're talking about sacrifice and stimulus, budget winners and losers in Cook County, where will state budget cuts be deepest, and will the Federal Recovery and Reinvestment Act be more than a Band-Aid? So you can join the conversation. Give us a call at 387-1070. Our email address is wtip@boreal.org. Let's talk a little bit more about stimulus. As somebody mentioned, unemployment benefits. Going to make any difference?
You know, I don't know that we know the numbers, Jay, but anecdotally, we would have to believe that it's going to make a difference. I don't know of any businesses up here that haven't been somehow affected by what is happening. And knowing the way that we normally get affected up here, the kind of delay process that takes place in a community that is driven by, our biggest businesses are government, tourism. We are going to see the effect of this for quite some time. So we've seen layoffs. We've seen people put on the streets. We know that this is going to be a helpful tool to us, the extension of unemployment benefits and other things that can be there. So without knowing the numbers, I think anecdotally we can say there will be a big benefit to those people.
How about with social services?
Well, first of all, I was just reading today that the budget director for the State Department of Human Services indicated that they're still trying to figure out how they're going to receive the money. So we don't know a real lot of the details, but in general, Brady mentioned one about the medical assistance. I see that stimulus money obviously will benefit our local clients because of the fact that people that were probably going to be not eligible for continued public health care benefits will probably now see them. And one of the reasons for that is because, first of all, the governor had planned to reduce the budget by reducing either benefit package or the eligibility requirements for people that are needing medical assistance. And now that the governor has accepted the stimulus monies, that comes with a hold harmless kind of agreement. In other words, they will not be able to reduce those benefit sets or change the eligibility. So I do see that as helping our clients. The other area where I feel that it will benefit people locally is that there will be more monies for the food support program. And that means people can eat better and healthy, possibly healthier food. Also, we are looking and expecting that there will be more money for child care assistance. That means if people do find jobs, they will be able to hopefully be eligible, or there'll be more people that will be eligible to receive child care assistance. That ends up lowering the cost for each individual family. Also, we've talked about programs. There's supposed to be some money going to Meals on Wheels, programs for some of the elderly services and that kind of thing. So while I wouldn't expect that the stimulus money is going to have any direct impact on the levy, local levy for Public Health and Human Services, it will benefit our clients through those other state and federal programs.
Brady?
I can give you a little bit of those statistics again from that. This is from the Department of Employment. Their January unemployment numbers, Cook County, they had 9.2% by their calculations, 274 unemployed. And if they're getting $25 a week for 52 weeks, that's $1,300 a year. That comes out to about $356,000. And you would expect that most of that would be spent locally. And if you're one of the businesses that's where that money's being spent, I'm sure that's significant.
Now, let's get back to these strings. I understand there's always strings attached to federal money, but the one that caught my eye was just what you were talking about, Sue, that a lot of the programs that the governor had sort of promised to cut deeply all of a sudden are held harmless by this stimulus money, which I assume has been accepted by the governor. He said it would. Now, some governors in some states have been line-iteming certain things like unemployment insurance and this kind of thing. Do we know anything about any of that? Is this, are these strings there, or is it going to help?
In terms of the main one that I know about is in the healthcare area. I will say that that's the one that has been addressed to us, I think that it could prevent persons who are on the Minnesota Care Program, which is a health insurance program where people actually have to qualify through eligibility, but they do still pay premiums, will probably be able to keep that, especially those people that have families with children. There had been talk about reducing some of those benefits, so I think that they won't be able to do that as a result of some of the strings that you mentioned.
I think it's important for people to understand, maybe the best way to put it is, why did some of these governors choose not to take the money? And if they understand that, I think they'll see some of the flaws that are present within the stimulus package and how it affects their ongoing way of doing business. We talked about structural deficit. The only way you attack a structural deficit is by changing programs. You take away or you add things to what you are actually paying for. When you attack a structural deficit by only throwing one-time money at it, which is a lot of the stimulus money, you have not changed the program in any way. Very much like Sue was saying, what the governor had originally indicated to do was raise the eligibility requirements and lower the benefit package for a health plan, which would have lowered the number of people in the health plan, making a structural change in the future. Now that he can't do that, and then he accepts the money, he is going to establish a benefit package, a benefit level, that will need to be sustained, probably, which will lead to, in the future, a higher structural problem. That's why many of the governors and a lot of people at our, in the role that I am, the policy decision maker, are choosing whether or not to accept these funds. If you want to change the future and actually have a positive effect on the structural problem that's going to be there in a few years, you have to think very hard about accepting money that's going to make you expand a program. That's the problem that these governors are having.
At 90.7 FM, you're tuned to WTIP, Grand Marais, Minnesota, and at 91.7 FM, transitter W219CU, the Gunflint Trail. It's about 2 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, and you are listening to WTIP's First Thursday Community Conversations program. We invite you to call in with a question or comment, 387-1070, 1-800-473-9847, or send us an email at WTIP@boreal.org. Taking a look at some temperatures around the region, at the Grand Marais Harbor, it is 34 degrees Fahrenheit. At the Grand Marais Airport, 34 degrees Fahrenheit. Silver Bay, 36. Ely, 36. Tonight, expect cloudy conditions, patchy fog in the evening, a chance of light rain, a chance of light snow in the late evening and overnight, patchy light freezing drizzle after midnight, lows 23 to 28. Southeast winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming west 10 to 15 miles per hour in the late evening and overnight. Chance of precipitation is 40%. Tomorrow, Friday, decreasing clouds, scattered flurries, and patchy light freezing drizzle in the morning, highs 35 to 40. West winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
First Thursday, we'll be with you for another almost half hour. And if you do have a question or comments for tonight's guest, please call us at 387-1070, 1-800-473-9847. At the risk of getting into politics a little bit here, which I'm sure none of you want to do, if the state cuts its way out of its current budget crisis, as I said at the top of the hour, the DFL legislators are not a lot of them enamored with what the governor is doing, but they estimate, the DFL legislators, that would be about a 13.5% across the board cut. That would include K-12 education, public safety, veterans programs, all of which the governor said he won't cut. And according to the DFL, Minnesotans probably wouldn't support that anyway. Now, is this, or what I think the DFL legislators have been saying is that if the poor and middle class take a hit, then taxes should be raised on the wealthy. Is that going to have an impact here if that would happen?
What are you looking at me for?
Oh, boy. We know you're dying to talk politics.
No, not really. I guess the quick answer probably in a community the size of Cook County is not much. I'll be perfectly frank. If the state has to cut its budget 13.5% and that means giving up some control, there's a part of me that says that's not a bad thing. If the end result of cutting is having to give some more authority back to the local units of government so that they can kind of quote unquote run the show to keep things in line, I don't see that as a big loss. Let's be honest. Whether they talk about if they're going to have to cut or not, the reality is they're going to have to cut. So to couch it in terms of, gee, it's going to be 13.5 across the board, can't hold anybody harmless, all those types of things, that's just rhetoric. The truth is they're going to have to do it. That is going to filter down to the local governments. We're going to have to ante up. We're going to have to tighten our belts, find a way to pay for things that we weren't paying for before. If I know the Minnesota people, if I know people in general, and you bring it down to a level where people have to attack a problem personally, honestly, I don't see that as a totally bad thing.
Mike, I'd like to ask you a little bit about the, you already know you're going to have to find $50,000 for 09 and $100,000 in 2010. Where are you going to find that?
That's a very good question. And we don't know yet, to be honest. When I presented this to the city council, I tried to put it in some more human or real terms about what that is, because we can bandy about numbers and percentages a lot, but what does it really mean to people? What are the services that $50,000 might buy? And so we talked about the fact that $50,000 is all the wages and benefits except for health insurance for one street maintenance worker, and we've only got one right now. So that's kind of a significant amount. It's almost all of our annual liability insurance, so we could just take a risk maybe next year. It's all of the amount we spend on the fleet for the street department, the parks department, and the fire department combined. So it's although we've got a big budget of, you know, multi-millions, $8-9 million a year, this cut comes in pieces of it that are pretty small, and our levy at $700,000, $50,000 is a lot to absorb. We're going to have to look for a lot of small pieces, and there aren't a lot of small pieces that are just going to happen without anybody noticing them. So the department heads are putting their heads together, and we'll come up with ideas for the council to consider. Right now, we haven't set any guidelines. We don't want to set any guidelines yet. We want people to have some open minds about it, but you know, the council's going to have to take a look and make some pretty hard decisions here.
Sue, I want to get back to a question that you actually posed when we started this program this evening at 6 o'clock. How will you survive these cuts and still maintain services?
Well, do you have any suggestions?
Well, what are your thoughts? You know, this is coming, you know, it's a reality.
It is. I'm feeling pretty confident yet for 2009 that we will be fairly secure. I think, fortunately, we in Public Health and Human Services here have a healthy fund balance. And so we will be drawing on that in our 2009 budget. When the commissioners approved our budget, they approved that we would do that. And so that will help. And if we could look at that again in 2010, that's perhaps an option. Beyond that point, it's going to be difficult. I will say that over the years, we have probably increased some of our fees. We have generated more revenue, found more revenue streams to help us balance our budget and not increase the levy a great deal. I believe, really become more efficient in terms of staff. We have more people that now are employed more hours in our department. We used to have more part-time people, which is also costly because they still, depending upon the hours they work, but they still qualify for a number of benefits. So you're not getting the hours for the money back for the money that you put into those people in some cases. So we've done that this past year. We also began charging our persons that we do, we call them social welfare. We manage their money for them because they're maybe not capable of doing it themselves. And the Social Security Administration allows you to charge a monthly fee, administrative fee, to those people. We have never done that before, and we started doing that. That gave us $5,000-$6,000 that we didn't have. So we've looked to places like that, and I think we've done about all we can without having to actually start reducing services. One of the concerns that I have is that we do get some grant money that is competitive money that we have to write on an annual basis, more or less now. Some of that used to be, guaranteed 3-year term, 5-year term, or whatever. And I have some concerns as the state budget has all of the deficits that some of those grants will be less available to us. And so that may mean in terms of like our in-home support program for elderly and offering caregiver classes and support, those kinds of things may have to go. And that will be unfortunate, but those are some of the things that aren't mandated. I think the other thing that certainly we know is this is a very giving community. And we can't say enough about how important it has been over the past years for entities like the Salvation Army, who raise money, bring some of those food vouchers, turn that some of that money into food vouchers or into vouchers that we can give to people for a few night stays, those kinds of things. We look for the support there. We also have some people that do anonymous donations to our department, perhaps for individual families, perhaps to send people to camp or to participate in sports or to get some special gifts, take maybe driver training class or whatever that their family could not afford if it wasn't for some of these donations. So sometimes it's possible to look to the community for some of those kinds of things as well. And those are the kinds of things that we're thinking about. What else is out there that could help us or could support us in making sure that we remain the safety net in the county?
I'd like to quickly say, and I hope the people in the community appreciate this, and I hope that Mike from the city can echo this. This goes back to the efficiency question that you asked earlier, Barbara Jean, about why are small communities more efficient? Let's be honest. When they come before the county board in these different departments, whether it's Shea's department, social services, wherever, we are going to ask them to work harder, and they're going to work harder. That is something you can't put down in black and white. It doesn't go on a balance sheet. But I will tell you that compared to the larger counties where it does go on a balance sheet and where everybody is measuring their hours by minutes and how often they're in the road or how often they're in a household doing some good, unlike those areas, the small communities literally do work harder. We are not going to see a reduction in services that are going to have to be delivered. We are probably going to see an increase. We are not going to see an increase in budget from the state. We'll probably see a decrease. But what you will see as a citizen on the street is either no change in service or probably an increase. And that is because of the efficiency of local government and the fact that your county employees are just going to work a little bit harder.
Brady.
Yeah, I mean, technology weighs in on that, too. We've seen enormous efficiencies with technology over the year. I just look at my own department. That staff hasn't increased in 25 years, and yet their workloads The amount of paper we push out in a paperless society has increased tremendously. The other thing I would say, if you just looking at when you were talking about cuts, and I'm looking at a staff like ours, if we had to cut hours, there's so much we do that's mandated, you know, internally. It's payroll, financial statements, audits, elections, so forth. But I think what would happen with the reduction in hours are the other things, the extra things that you just, you wouldn't find time for. I'm looking at a great program, the surveying of Hovland, these areas that are, you know, hundreds of feet off in different directions. And that's something the county board has taken on. I don't think it's really the county board's responsibility, but I mean, you might say it's more the federal or the state government, but they're not going to do it. And for the citizens up here, the county's taken that on. But those are the kind of things that may fall by the wayside simply by a lack of time. Firewise programs. Well, the volunteers can do that rather than staff helping out and doing minutes and administrative and et cetera. And those are great services. They're really efficient and effective services, but they're not mandated.
I'd like to address the technology issue also. The highway department is jumping on board that more and more all the time. We're utilizing GPS and GIS to start inventorying everything from our signs that are out there on the roads that keep people safe, to the condition of the pavement, to the condition of the gravels, the culverts, to help us take a better overall look and do our transportation more efficiently by knowing the status of everything that's out there rather than just what happens to be in our head of, oh yeah, that road needs some work done on it. Actually being able to do a whole overview. I think our commissioners have liked too, as many departments have been bringing forward PowerPoint presentations, the maps that we can produce that can give not only the commissioners, but our public too, a bird's eye view just like that of what we're doing out there in the field. I think it's just fabulous. We got electronic timesheets in the highway department, spent a tiny little bit of money, opened up about half of our clerk's time, and we've now got a aggressive safety program in the highway department that's just getting kicked off and is off to a really fabulous start. So we are always looking for ways to it's an old Forest Service thing, do more with less.
Again, this is an expanded version of First Thursday Community Conversation on WTIP. With Barbara Jean Myers, I'm Jay Anderson, and tonight we're talking about sacrifice and stimulus, budget winners and losers in Cook County. Where will state budget cuts be the deepest, and will the Federal Recovery and Reinvestment Act be more than just a Band-Aid? Join the conversation and call us at 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847, or go online at WTIP@boreal.org. Let's talk a little bit more about some of these. We were talking about mandates, and Brady mentioned mandates, of course, Health and Human Services. Bob, earlier in the discussion, you mentioned MOEs, maintenance of efforts. What exactly is that, and how does that figure into the conversation?
I'm not picking on this particular subject, but the easiest way to describe it would be probably libraries. When we do budgeting for libraries, there's a baseline that they started at a while ago, and then every year you had to increase the spending, not the program, but the spending by a certain percentage over that amount every year. That's a maintenance of effort. It could also be a maintenance of effort to just hold the line on providing a particular service. The one that is most difficult for the counties is the maintenance of effort that requires a certain elevation of payment or a maintaining of a certain level of payment for a particular program. This is exactly, ironically, what happened to the state with the medical assistance thing. When they got the money from the federal government, what they received from the federal government was literally a maintenance of effort. They could not reduce the program that they had in place, which is a maintenance of effort, to accept the money. The difficulty of the maintenance of effort is very simple, and I think any family who does a budget can relate to this. If you are required to increase your payment for a particular item every year, but you are not given an opportunity to increase your income, or in effect, lower your income, the two don't go together well. And what has happened to local governments is they have been required to increase their payment, at the same time have levy limits, or now in this case, actually have reduced amounts of money coming in. Lower revenues, higher costs.
We have a phone call. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Frank Hansen. I wonder if the panel could comment on whether they think there's any contribution that the people of Cook County can make in helping the officials to prevent what looks like an upcoming disaster. Any approach that we can make to our state legislators, to our federal congressmen, senators, anything like that? Do you think there's any point in it, or is it pretty much a lost cause? Thank you.
Thanks for that call. Anyone want to weigh in?
Looks like Mike does.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Frank. This is Mike Roth, the city administrator. And a little earlier we were talking about how local governments can provide services a lot more efficiently. And I know that those of us that are involved in providing the services believe that, but we'd like to hope that you out there that are the beneficiaries of those services believe that as well. And if that's the case, tell that to your state officials. They hear it from us all the time, but it would be great if other local people would also let them know that local agencies are the best place for these decisions to be made, and local control is very important. And just hearing that message, I think, helps a lot.
I would also like to thank you, Frank, for your calling in and saying, asking what you can do. It would be important from a perspective of client services for people to say to their legislators that they are not supportive of 15 service delivery sites for health and human services in the state of Minnesota. Perhaps it's acceptable for some type of redesign of delivery, and I think there are some possibilities being discussed to look at, but certainly a top-down forced effort, something that is made up of 15 sites that we're not even sure why that number was used, does not seem like the best way to provide services to our Minnesota residents. So I think that being said, a couple other things could be that it would be certainly looked at as a pilot. Let some areas try it first. Let it be locally designed. Let it be voluntary, and see where it goes versus trying to make this kind of a structural change within a few years in the state of Minnesota.
I would like to echo exactly what Mike Roth said. You couldn't have said it better. The citizenry needs to be involved, as we are with the state legislators, to let them know that one of the redesigns that needs to take place at the state level is to empower local governments to do the job. I'd like to add one more thing to that, a different level. Many times we at the local level feel like we're being put upon by the special interests that approach the higher levels of government to impose what they want to see happen at the local level. And they use the higher level of government to impose those things. I'd like to say back off for a while and work at the local level. And don't use the power of a larger government, whether it be state or federal, to impose what they think ought to be happening at the local level on us down here. That goes hand in hand with the realization that local politics, local delivery service, local autonomy is very critical. And I would like to thank personally the people of Cook County, Frank being one. He's a perfect example of the type of people that are in our community. We feel tremendous support from the people in our community. I can tell you that in traveling around the state and talking to other county officials. I'm sure Mike feels the same way about his job. We are very, very fortunate in having that input and support from the people of our area.
We've just got a few minutes left, but the state's economist, Tom Stinson, says it will be 2011 to 2012 before the nation's economy, and hence our own, gets back to the mid-2007 level. If that's true, what does that do to your budget planning?
It puts a primary emphasis on two levels. One, keeping our spending in check, and two, maximizing our revenues for the future. everything is so incumbent upon us being able to look out in the future to 2011, 2012, 2013. Whatever we can do, I'm speaking personally now as a county, to make sure that our revenues are going to be there in the future, we need to do. There is absolutely no doubt that we are going to see a deficit, not only in 2010 and 11, but in 2012 and 13. It is going to be there without a doubt. It may be just as significant as it is today. At the local level, we need to maximize our use of funds today so that we have that rainy day fund out there. And I think this county board is thinking of that very literally.
Shay?
On the transportation level, we're trained to think for the long term. Most of the time we think about, most agencies have a 20-year plan, and that's something I hope to develop here for the County Highway Department over the next year and a half. And so you develop an ability to kind of learn how to skip over the rough spots and kind of hold on. And you just keep reinventing. You just keep reanalyzing. Where can I change things? Okay, this money fell through. Okay, I can't do that. The roads are going to keep going downhill. How can I stretch that? It's actually, for an engineer, it's hard, but it's also really fun. It's a challenge because you're looking at so many different situations with so many different facets and trying to figure out still how to do the best job you can with all those changes.
It seems to me that if we're talking about a few years to get back to where we were in the middle of 2007, that probably addresses what Mike and Brady have been talking about, structural budgeting. How do you know how to do that? I mean, how can you, when you're talking about reducing expenditures in a county or a city budget over that period of time, do they ever come back? Do the programs ever come back?
That's difficult to answer. We've not gone through that since my experience here. And I think we're going to be very dependent on what happens to the federal and to the state and how they react to that. So I don't think we're isolated in this. Partly this program with the organization AMC with the state, that's a good example of the kind of thing that I think we're going to be doing more and more of. That may be the first program of its type, but I think we'll all be working all the way up to the federal level more closely than we have for a long, long time. I don't see any other way around it.
We've never been in the position of, your question was, will the program come back? I don't think I've ever been asked that in government before. Usually it's, will the program go away?
Yeah.
And I think what might happen, and I don't know if this is good or bad, Jay, I'm only saying it might happen. When we do cut programs, and we may, we hopefully are going to cut programs that we do not think are as significant to the overall operation of the county, and I think they might do the same thing at the state level. The question will be asked then once they're cut, if they are cut, is were they significant in the first place? And I think that's a fair question to ask. And if they don't come back, if they don't, maybe there's a reason for it. So if any good comes out of what we're going through, that might be it.
And a fair question of the state, when the economy turns around, will local government aid come back? I'm not holding out a lot of hope.
Well, the reason I ask the question is they always say that, once the tax is in place, it never goes away. Yeah. But here we're talking about programs that are going away, and I guess I hear both on the city and the county level that there's really no fat to trim, and yet you have to trim something. What are you going to trim?
Stay tuned.
Yes, Sue.
One of the things that I see that may be happening in some of the areas that we work are redefinitions of what some of these terminologies mean. For example, people that have disabilities of a given kind or meet certain requirements are eligible for specific programs. Some of those are called waivered services, which is a package of services to help the person maybe live independently or whatever. And one of the things that we've been told is that And what's already happened is that we have a more limited number of those kinds of services available. And the reason for that is they're going to define disability differently. And so people may not have as many opportunities to take advantage of some of these healthcare programs and some of these services, which may put more of that back to the local families to deal with and to provide more of the care, more of the service, more of the cost through their local family. And that is concerning.
But if they are also in a financial bind until the through the next couple of years, that may not be easy for them to do either.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Well, that will have to do it for tonight. We've been listening to an expanded version of First Thursday Community Conversation on WTIP North Shore Community Radio. Tonight we've been discussing sacrifice and stimulus, budget winners and losers in Cook County. Our guests have been County Highway Engineer Shay Kosmalski, Health and Human Services Director Sue Futterer, Auditor Treasurer Brady Powers, Cook County Commissioner Bob Fenwick, and Mike Roth, Grand Marais City Administrator. Thank you. Thank you all. And with Barbara Jean Myers, I'm Jay Anderson. The Section 7A Girls Basketball Tournament is up next with Norman Moe and Dick Dorr.